heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Well, it's safe to say that the American people have been kind of waiting patiently now for close to 4 years as this, we keep hearing Obamagate, hashtag Obamagate, but there's a lot of other descriptives you can put on this Russia collusion affair. We've all been talking about it for some time. And of course, one of the big gripes out there from conservatives is that where are the indictments or where are people being held accountable? There have been a lot of pieces to this scandal, and we're seeing it really blow wide open right now as we come into, well, a very pivotal election here in 2020. So this is interesting now. So President Trump tweets out on, Tuesday, October 6th, and this is the tweet. This was a tweet that was heard around the world, believe me, and it went like this. I have fully authorized the total declassification of any and all documents pertaining to the single greatest political crime in American history, the Russia hoax. Likewise, the Hillary Clinton email scandal, no redactions. Now, what people mostly seen there was no redactions, because you almost never get that in Washington. So what that's equivalent to, people, that's equivalent to President Trump open up the doors of the deep state and saying, have had it. Go get it. And, you know, this is really what he had promised from the beginning. Of course, a lot of people never believed this would happen, this day would happen. But this is huge. This is monumentous here. It's what's happened. And I think you're going to see some real interesting things. You can already see the players, the Brennan, the Clappers, the Comeys, scrambling. And you can also see the body language of these people and their voices as well. Just pay attention to that a little bit, and you'll get a real scent here of what exactly is going on, but it's quite historical. So listen, today, special program, Trump plays the Trump card is what I would suggest to you. And I would suggest to you that this really was him saying, you know what, I'm not going to have this anymore. Here it is. Here's the truth, the gospel truth. And now you do what you want with it, America. Well, that's kind of refreshing people from any sort of standards, right? Well, and then we've got this major movie coming out here right on the verge of the 2020 election that I think is really I have seen the movie, The Trump Card, a very, very fascinating movie, which really puts it in perspective about what the danger and of socialism is to our nation. But it really goes deeper than that as well. And it really showcases some of the political warfare that is happening in America here. Joining me next here is Dinesh D'Souza. Well, Dinesh is, of course, a filmmaker and author. He's really become a documentary political, one of the, probably the best, I would say, in the nation. He's had films. You remember Hillary's America here. You also remember 2016, Obama's America. And he's had a series of these films that have been highly successful. Now, this next one, The Trump Card, is now, it's out there. It's available right now, so you can get it. In fact, if you go to our navigation bar at America Out Loud to the bookstore here, which are available worldwide, there's a link right in there. Just, you'll see it right there with Dinesh's film, and you can go ahead and get the film on DVD. You can buy it or rent it. It is available worldwide. This film is now The Trump Card. Okay, this tweet with the president and this really the declassification here of all these documents and no redactions, which we're still getting our hands on here. And I think everybody is scrambling to see what that's all about here. So you had put a tweet out there to follow that up on the president. And you said, so now we know Hillary was behind it. Obama gave the order. The only question now is what our side will do with this information. Will we merely talk about it, or will someone bring out the indictments and the handcuffs? And you reference hashtag Obamagate. Now you nailed it right there, Dinesh, because that really part and parcel is the problem of why so many Americans are so distrusting of Washington, because it seems like there's more than just two faces of justice. Nobody ever seems to pay a price for these crimes. Is this the game changer, what the president has done here?
I think it is the necessary first step, which is to say, to bring the information out, to lift the curtain on the deep state. Now, let's think about what these crimes are. We're not talking about ordinary people evading taxes or doing some kind of offense. We're talking about, you can call them thugs with badges. In other words, these are the leaders of the police agencies of government. They're entrusted with applying the law in a neutral manner. And yet they have been part of what I suppose can only be called a conspiracy, because it's hard to believe that Strzok and Page and Comey and Clapper and Brennan were all just independently pursuing these objectives. No, there was a coordination. There were meetings, including a White House meeting. Obama and Biden were both present at that meeting. We now have documentary evidence of Hillary's involvement, in fact, at the very outset. So that's the point, that it is of supreme importance that when people in power abuse their power in this way and try to subvert the result of a democratic election, that there be some very serious accountability. Now, Trump has not controlled his own Justice Department for much of the first term, so I'm a little forgiving of why this has taken so long, but I don't think it should take any longer than necessary.
Yeah, and so the question now becomes, is Attorney General William Barr up to the task? And a lot of people are questioning that. You know, this brings into light, Dinesh, as well, the whole Mueller investigation. And the president had retweeted a tweet from Representative Louis Gohmert here, and it said this: "What I have accumulated here is absolutely shocking upon the realization that Mueller's disreputable, twisted history speaks to the character of the man placed in a position to attempt to legalize a coup against a lawfully elected president." So, you know, we were referencing this as a coup d'etat some time ago. We don't hear that as much anymore, but clearly, I mean, this is now in the light of day. It's kind of hard to deny this is not a coup. I don't see how America moves forward without first coming to its truthful moment, if you will, and washing away some of these past crimes. A lot of people are skeptical on this. They don't think it's going to happen, but I don't see how it can't happen, Dinesh.
Well, I think the Mueller investigation had two objectives. The first one was to try, if possible, to get Trump. And the second was to cover up the crimes of the deep state. Remember, Mueller comes out of the deep state. So this would literally be a case of, you know, appointing someone from the Corleone family to investigate the mafia. What they're going to try to do is to cover up the crimes of the mafia. In fact, if possible, deny that there is a mafia at all, as Al Pacino does in the movie. Now, the second thing is that Republicans here, and I'm now speaking of the Durham investigation, tend to be real tortoises or plotters. They always want to dot every I and cross every T. And Durham is known to be a very methodical and by the book type of guy. But it's worth noting that this is not how the Democrats operate. This is not how the left operates. Their modus operandi is indict first, investigate after. So indict someone, then try to get him to talk and try to build a case around him, but go for it. And so there's a real difference of approach between the two sides.
Yeah, that is perfectly said. But, you know, we're going to lose this thing if they don't start to really ramp up these investigations and bring them to a head. But you say it perfectly. And a lot of people are wondering why the left gets away with so much. And you just say it right there. A lot of it is because of the way the right operates. You know, sometimes, Dinesh, you have to fight fire with fire. You can't just sit, especially at a point. I mean, do you think for a moment they wouldn't have, what do you think they would do if it was that shoe was on the other foot right now? Right.
Exactly. What would they do with the Supreme Court if they had the presidency and the Senate and an opening and a chance to put someone in the court? I mean, their candidate would be on the court already. So the broader point here, and I want to dive into this because we discussed this at some length in the movie and in Trump Card, is this. And that is that the left knows that we, the conservatives, the Christians, the Republicans, we're sort of the party of the nice guys. And the left believes that we will never do to them what they do to us. so they can keep doing it with impunity. They feel like they can knock down our monuments. We will never knock down their monuments. Mm-hmm. They can use the deep state against us. Even if we had the power, we would never use the deep state against them. They can stack and pack the court. They know that we have no intention of doing it from our side. So what you have is essentially a group of guys who thinks that they can up the ante, not play by the rules, and get away with it. And meanwhile, they expect us to play by the rules because they are taking advantage of our decency and our virtue.
Yeah, so then you have to ask yourself, does the nice guy finish last or does he finish first then?
Well, the nice guy's got to realize that it's time to change the rules and toughen up. The nice guy's got to realize, listen, we are moderate people. We are moderate men, but we are not in a moderate situation. This is exactly what Abraham Lincoln realized when he arrived in Washington in early 1861. The Democratic Party had become gangsterized, and the old rules of politics, the kind of customary or normal way of doing things, was insufficient.
You see, in order to look at these problems and really solve these challenges of our nation, we have to be able to look at the psychology behind things. Now, not many people do that, Dinesh. So let me just say up front here that what I applaud most about your work, and I think most people listen and know this, is that you get into the psychology of the situation and you explain it in terms that people can understand, which enhances why I bring up next this amazing film, The Trump Card, as we look at what you've done here. Now, listen, I want to talk about what we're speaking right now in relation to the film. It's an enormous film for an enormous moment of time, for sure. And, you know, let's talk about the argument the left uses all the time. Now, you reference in the film, if I recall properly here, that the left always says that Trump created the chaos. That's their words. I mean, that's what they're, well, I was, you know, chuckling in a sad way while all this was going on, Dinesh. You know, look at our cities, look at our towns, look at this. I mean, you know, and they keep playing all of that, you know, and the virus, the handy dandy virus from China. Of course, they jumped all over that thing. That was a gift for them. But this was their next form of impeachment because everything else did not work clearly. But, you know, so Trump created all the chaos. Look at the chaos. Look at, there's another rat running over there. Look at this. And yet, but the reference point of the film, or did the chaos create Trump? And really, it kind of is that way, isn't it? That this is why you've got somebody like Trump who has to rise to the occasion. All of these circumstances or situations, including this last declassification, really points to the fact of who Trump is. He's a historical figure in our American politics, is he not?
He's a very consequential president. And one of the things he does is he's taught the Republicans how to fight. Republicans tried nominating these kind of squeaky clean Boy Scouts from George H.W. Bush to Mitt Romney to John McCain. The problem is we discovered that those guys were quickly beaten to a pulp by the other side. And there was a kind of wimp factor that we had to deal with, that there was just no fight in our leaders. And so it made Republicans very impatient. And they finally said, listen, if the other side is going to be gangsterized, or they're going to be the tough guys, if you will, well, we need kind of a tough guy on our side who's going to be able to give as good as he gets, who's not going to put up with their nonsense. That's how we got Trump.
Yeah, true. But they really weren't Boy Scouts, were they? I mean, kind of these are globalists we're speaking about now. These are people who had another agenda. They just hid it from America, didn't they?
Well, yes. I mean, that's true. But by Boy Scouts, I just meant that they satisfy the left's requirement for people who speak in a modulated tone. Mm-hmm. They've got these impeccable resumes. So they seemed like safe candidates. We tried that approach. And we realized that we need a fighter. Now, look, in the Reagan era, Reagan was a fighter, but the nature of the battle was different. We were fighting a Cold War with a foreign adversary, the Soviet Union. Now we are in a cold civil war. Our moment is somewhat similar to 1859 or 1860. This is kind of why in my last couple of movies, including the new one, Trump Card, I invoked the Lincoln analogy because although people debate what was the Civil War about, was it really about slavery? Well, one thing it was about is the fact that a Republican legitimately won a free election, got an electoral majority, and all hell broke loose.
Yeah, it was an amazing moment of time in the 1860s here, first Republican president, and it just created a whole new legacy that has moved forward with the Republicans and the Democrats when the Whig Party went away. And I've referenced before, I still think this is that moment in time where some other things could happen to our political landscape here, because we're not talking business as usual right now or politics as usual. I mean, we're talking some pretty big moments for this nation. You know, one of the things that worry me, Dinesh, coming into this election here now in 2020 is the scapegoat of this whole lawlessness and this whole the COVID thing of the lockdown, the blue states, the cities, the pain, suffer. It's almost like they got their foot on the faces of a lot of Americans and these Marxist mayors and these Marxist governors and local politicians. And they're saying, you suffer, you bastard, you suffer. You know, it's almost of that magnitude. Where, you know, all of this is their means to get to Trump, they're going through. Now, what I wonder is, Dinesh, and this is important, if we're going to be successful in 2020 here, the American people have to realize what we're talking about right now, because if they don't realize who created all of this chaos, all this lawlessness, and who has really politicized the COVID, now you get to a really scary moment in our nation with this election.
Yeah, I would separate the two issues, COVID on the one side and the riots on the other. Clearly, COVID represents for the Democrats an opportunity to mobilize and politicize the politics of fear. You know, Trump's position kind of reminds me of FDR's during the Depression. FDR said the thing you have to fear most is fear itself. That's what Trump is saying. FDR said, look, we have to live with the Depression till we can get out of it. That's what Trump is saying about COVID. So this is the American kind of can-do spirit that faces up to problems, even serious ones, and gets through them. The Democratic approach is be afraid, be very afraid. Now, they're not doing this because they're genuinely fearful of the virus. They're doing it because if they can put the country into perpetual lockdown, Trump can't revive the economy. Moreover, they can use coronavirus as a pretext to go after religious liberty, to go after freedom of assembly, to essentially undermine the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. And what this shows us is that socialism today is not just about economic confiscation, but it's also about a deprivation of civil liberties.
Doesn't this whole election pin on what you say right there, that the majority of Americans are going to have to realize what you just said? I mean, doesn't this whole election pin on that point?
Yeah, and I think the American people do and will get it. It's true that many people are inattentive to politics for much of the time, but they do start paying attention right about now. I think they can see that Biden is a cardboard figure and that ultimately he is in a rowboat that he's not even controlling the oars of. Trump, on the other hand, is a dynamic leader. Sure, he sometimes shoots from the hip, but he's a big-hearted guy and he's very competent. He's done amazing things for America in one term. And think of what he can do if he got a second term.
Yeah, that is exactly it. We are speaking to Dinesh D'Souza here. And this movie is called The Trump Card. It is out there. It is available now. You can get to really anywhere. You can get a film on DVD. You can rent or buy it. Certainly buy it in the Amazon store there, or right through our America Out Loud bookstore, which is right on the navigation bar, as you know, because so many of you go there and buy those books in there and films. There are a lot of films in there. In fact, Dinesh's earlier films, I believe, are in the bookstore as well. But you can get this one right there for sure. Or just go to Amazon or wherever and secure the film. It's good to sit down with the family and watch it, really. It's good for the kids to also understand this history. But more so than that, people, it's the danger of what's ahead, which Dinesh points out very effectively in the film. Now, what I'm speaking about here is the word socialism, right? I mean, we haven't even touched on that yet, but that is really one of the big lessons in this film that he points out, is the dangers of socialism. And it's not just the warm and fuzzy that people are throwing around right now. As we see, they're trying to hide a lot of this through the Unity Task Force that Biden has signed with Sanders. And of course, Kamala Harris is being, you know, really the big supporter and endorsement of the Green New Deal and this whole Unity Task Force. You can see socialism is really pushed its way into the American landscape far more than any of us would have ever realized. So we'll take that up more and a whole lot more here on The Voice of the Nation just after this pause.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. This is not a fight of Republican versus Democrat. It's not a fight of rich versus poor, old versus young, man versus woman, gay versus straight. It's not a fight of black lives, blue lives, Hispanic lives, or white lives. This is a battle of good versus evil. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio. And you are listening there to the amazing voice of Debbie D'Souza here. It is quite the rendition. You haven't heard that one like this before, America the Beautiful. She does an incredible job with it. And it's a very interesting, poignant moment with the movie, The Trump Card, that we've been talking about with Dinesh D'Souza. Dinesh, growing up as a young boy, we would talk about, you know, the American Communist Party. And I recall this on the ball fields as a young lad playing baseball and all of that. And it was always sort of a side joke, like, a bit of a chuckle, and it would never happen here. Like many of us were like, is there really a Communist Party in America? Like, does that really kind of exist? And of course it did. But we never really thought it would see the light of day like it is. Now, you talk about choice in the film is, I think, the big message. And to me, what I got out of it is, okay, are we going to embrace our founding principles of what makes and made America great? Or are we going to embrace this new path of socialism? It truly is a moment. It is that proverbial fork in the road, but it's not even a fork, Dinesh, it's a cliff. One road is a cliff right off the damn edge, and the other road is back to our founding principles. Let's take it from there and tell us with the film socialism and what people really need to understand.
Well, socialism is the opposite of the American idea. The American idea is based on entrepreneurship. The American idea is based on ladders of opportunity, of being in the driver's seat of your own life. Socialism isn't about building things up. In other words, you can almost contrast Trump with Antifa and you can see the difference. So what does Trump do? He builds the Wollman skating rink. He builds casinos. He builds Trump Tower. He builds resorts. What does Antifa do? They break windows. They pull statues down. They harass people in restaurants. So on the one case, you have the building up. In the other case, you have the pulling down. And right there in a very simple picture, you see the difference between entrepreneurship on the one hand or capitalism and socialism on the other. So the left ultimately likes socialism because it puts them in the driver's seat of the economy. They want to be the planners and organizers with all the power. They want to be able to tell the corporations what to do. And then they are offering in return, they're telling the citizens, listen, you know, why don't you be a drone? You might have gotten used to sitting on your couch and not going to work. Well, how about if we make that condition sort of permanent? We'll just send you $2,000 a month. And all you have to do in return for that is give us something that costs you nothing, namely your vote. So you see here that this is a corrupt scheme, a kind of collusion, if you will, between the democratic political class and a group of people who would rather sit on the couch and be a drone than do something meaningful and productive with their life.
Well, many of them don't look at socialism as the threat that it is. And a lot of that is because the Democrats have, they have made a career out of this, Dinesh. And I think what people need to understand that if you really, analyze really in past times here, the Democrats, their policies and the impact they've had on the public, I think anybody would come to the conclusion they don't want to solve the problems. The Democrats, I remember Reverend C.L. Bryant and Herman Cain, both dear friends, and they would often call it the Democrat plantation, using their words, of course. But really, the Democrat plantation, they've been successful with that, not just with Black America. They've done it with Jewish America. They've done it with women. They've done it with the low poverty people in America. The Democrats have created this whole environment that they don't want to solve any problems because they keep people engaged that way, that, oh, what's the next? It's like the cliffhanger of what's the next problem that, you're going to try to, talk about, but never really solve. It's kind of a sick way to run things, isn't it?
Well, but why would they solve the problem? Think about the inner cities. This is a place where the Democrats get the highest percentage of their votes. They'll have Black communities that are voting 90%, 95% for the Democrats. So if you are a politician, why would you want to change that? Let's assume that some of these inner cities began to see some prosperity. They became safer. The schools became better. People actually had the opportunity to move up in life and move out of the inner city. That would be a calamity, a political calamity for the Democrats. So keeping people in a kind of suspended dependency of misery, that's basically their formula for political success.
And they have been successful with it. So I think the question is, does this all come up now at a point in moment in American politics where the country begins to really see the dangers of this? In the film, you talk about also Ilhan Omar, as I recall, and you some pretty strong thoughts or comments in the film. Dinesh, talk about that a moment. You talk about her being specifically funded by Iranian extremists. And I think this is something Americans need to know.
Yeah, these are some of the signature elements of my films. I try to have a fearlessness in them where I go where other people don't go. And we've heard a lot about Russia collusion, which has turned out to be a fraud. But there is active Islamic collusion in American politics. And I'm not talking about Muslims in America who are organizing politically. I'm talking about radical Islamic regimes like Iran using intermediaries like Qatar to fund American politics, to fund politicians, to fund think tanks, to pay off reporters and journalists. Now, this stuff is never reported, but it has become a feature of our politics. Ilhan Omar is kind of symbolic of a Muslim American, a woman with a hijab, someone who sort of claims to be the ultimate victim, right? I'm Black, I'm a woman, I'm from the desert, I'm Muslim, I'm the ultimate minority, and therefore she thinks she's immune from scrutiny. She can marry her brother and get around the immigration law. She can violate the campaign finance law. She can pull all kinds of shenanigans. She can even sort of drum up fake votes. And nothing seems to happen to her. And this victim status appears to be part of what protects her.
There, as I understand it, in the 2020 election, by the way, there are a lot of other people like Omar, a lot more Muslims running, and a lot more people with sort of these shady records. Is that what you understand?
Well, for sure. They would like to. We quote an imam, a Muslim imam named Tahiti in the film, where he says, look, their view is that the future of America must be Muslim. And the symbol of that is to have the Friday prayer, the Ramadan prayers in the White House. They want to show that Muslims, in a sense, are running the show. Now, you know, if you had talked about this a few years ago, people would think this is downright incredible and almost to the point of being silly. But somehow it's not. I mean, what's happened is you've got a bizarre alliance between the radical left in this country mm-hmm. and the Islamic radicals. So these may make strange bedfellows to a degree, because, of course, the American left is secular. The Muslims are not. The American left is permissive. The Muslims are not. But they have found common cause and common enemies. And so they're fighting on the same political side right now.
Well, yeah, and it's about continuing their power and making sure they have their power base. And I would imagine they will stoop to any level to retain that, including what they've done just now in selling out their country. I would imagine there's nothing beneath them that they would do. And that's pretty sad to say, as far as a major political party in our nation goes. Again, I really believe we're coming to the end of some kind of a road with this Democrat Party, Dinesh. I don't see, after all of this, as we get through the election and all this happens with this Russia thing and all this sees the light of day, I can't see how they continue on as the warm and fuzzy little Democrat Party, harmless as they put out that they were. I've referenced that three times with you now. I think there's a rude awakening coming forward with this party. You agree with that assessment?
I do. I think that we're not dealing with the old Democratic Party at all. The Democratic Party in the past might have been, you know, they might have done dumb stuff. Look at Jimmy Carter. If I had to award a prize for presidential nincompoopery for the 20th century, I'd give it to Carter. He was a bungler. He wanted to get rid of a bad guy, the Shah of Iran, and he got a worse guy, Khomeini. So this kind of idiocy defined his presidency, but he wasn't malevolent. You know, he would not have done the deal where he would have traded one American deserter for five seasoned Taliban commanders the way Obama did. So with Obama and Hillary, you're dealing now with a malevolent and corrupt gang of people. These are the disciples of Saul Alinsky, who, by the way, dedicates his book to Satan. So this is the crew we're dealing with. I think our goal should be to send the Democratic Party the way of the Whigs. I don't think they can really be redeemed or rescued. We really need a new party in America to be the sort of honest opposition party.
That has really been my message over the past really 6 months to America, Dinesh, is exactly what you're saying there. And it's not that I'm not advocating one political party in our nation. I don't believe that's the answer at all. In fact, I'd like to see at least three or four come off the ground, not just one more. But I think the moderates, the independents, the left of center, the blue dogs, the JFKs, I think those will find a happier day if they come together and to a new power base and let the far left go. You know, one of the points with this election, Dinesh, is China and Iran both want Joe Biden to win. I mean, that's very clear. They're right out there. But yet, you know, if you think about it in these terms, if China managed to elect Joe Biden, that really would, I think what America needs to know is that would mean China effectively have won. Not only did they put the COVID out there and do the harm in the around the world and the economic destruction here and the lives that have been lost, but clearly that would be a victorious moment for them to get a Joe Biden in there. I think America needs to realize that.
The truth is Joe Biden is a kind of a bought and paid for politician. Trump alluded to this in the first debate, but Trump only alludes to things. He doesn't explain them. So he says to Biden, hey, didn't your son get $3.5 million from a Russian oligarch? Now, there's a big story here, which is, I call it the Biden family racket. Every time Biden went on a vice presidential trip on behalf of Obama, he would take a family member in tow. And while Biden was having official meetings, the family member, whether it's his brothers, James or Frank Biden, whether it's his son Hunter Biden, would make side deals with these foreign governments, resulting in large transfers of cash into the Biden family coffers. This is how Biden went from zero to $100 million on a government salary. This is why he has multiple homes, domestic staff, private planes, the whole deal. So Trump touched on it, but our movie lays out this story in a kind of appalling and riveting detail.
Yeah, I want to tell folks, too, the music you heard coming back in from the last pause, and you'll hear again a little bit later in the program here, is from your amazing, beautiful, and talented wife, Debbie D'Souza. Boy, does she have a voice, Dinesh.
Well, you know, she's from Venezuela, and she was singing on a Venezuelan TV show when she was 3 years old. So she's been singing all her life. She's made three CDs. She's a professional and accomplished singer. So I was very proud to have her in the movie. And I think this is an almost unforgettable rendition of America the Beautiful.
It is truly a gift, America the Beautiful. I mean, you're hearing it sung by Debbie D'Souza in such a way that you haven't heard before. And, you know, when that film starts, it really strikes at your heart chords. And it gives you the levity of the moment with Abraham Lincoln there and the train. And of course, it ends that way as well. Dinesh, your impact in really the political circles, everybody knows, but more so, as I've suggested already, your filmmaking and your willingness to peel apart the argument and look at what's really behind that is impeccable. So for that, we applaud you, Dinesh, and wish you great success with this film.
I thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
Okay, my fellow Americans, we'll pause just a moment. Back with more Voice of the Nation in just a moment.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. Contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
You know, it's an interesting moment in American politics. We often say the enemy that we must fear the most is the enemy within. It's not the enemy abroad that is our problem. Truly, it isn't. And I tell you this all the time. It is really the enemy here within. And we're dealing with that right now in ways that we could not have imagined just a year ago or, you know, some years ago to what we would be facing right now. In fact, if you think about it in these terms, you know, quite frankly, with 2020, as we now come through this pivotal election moment here, this was almost a year when we started to hear those early signs, some of the early indications that this virus had taken hold in China. We just heard that at the very end of the year in 2019. And, you know, the idea was a lot of people thought, well, it's not going to impact us here. We don't really need to worry. And quite frankly, all your experts said that, if you remember. I mean, Fauci and all the people in the house, they all said the same thing. It's not really going to be the problem. And I mean, they're on record. You can go back and listen to them and look at their, read their comments as well or hear them. But there were a lot of people like that who were in positions of power in our government agencies and others who thought, yeah, this is not going to impact us to any degree. We have nothing really to worry about. And boy, were they wrong. We had everything to worry about, mostly because we didn't face this as a country. We didn't unite behind the problem to fix the problem. The problem was politicized. It was politicized because it came in at that time when that's all they had was that tool. There was nothing else that they had available to them. Remember, they had exhausted everything else. What else were they going to do? I mean, it was pretty extreme already with what we were facing as a country. And you've seen the turmoil and the disruption that the Trump administration had went through. And I referenced the Trump administration because it really is the entire administration that they tried to decapitate far more than just the the president. I mean, Donald Trump is one person, but there's a whole administration, remember, that moves forward every day, that moves that mission and that plan for America forward every day. And the impact that had on America as a whole, from sea to shining sea, all of our people were impacted from the events that had taken place from this. So it really is a moment to look back and understand what we've been through as a people. Now, the thing I don't want you to lose sight of is this. You know, there are a lot of people, and I get this, that are very fear. You know, the fear has been put out there to a maximum leveraging point from the left. I mean, they have leveraged the fear factor in ways that you would never have been imagining. And again, what is it? Just all we have to fear is fear itself, was the famous words of FDR, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about here, which is really President Trump's optimistic view of America that drives the left absolutely crazy. I mean, they never know what to do with that. You see, that view that he has when he puts it out there in such a way, it's like, you know, they say, what are you doing, Mr. President? You're undoing all the evil things we've done. We have put a lot, we weaved another web over here of deceit and lies, and you're hurting us. You're undoing that with you. And that's what really is when they, you know, the left and the media start this whole thing about Trump. Oh, can you believe he's being so compassionate, and he's, you know, they go after him immediately. What do you mean that you don't have to worry about the COVID? I mean, what do you mean that we can defeat this in such a way when this is really causing us such harm and death? And what about the 200,000 plus? Of course, they never get into the record that those numbers are made up. They could never do that with you to know that, well, we paid all the hospitals and the medical institutions really, really well. If they just put COVID on the death certificate, we'd send them a nice bonus check. Of course, that's not ever discussed. That's a fact, people. That's not a conspiracy. That's truth. This was leveraged financially for the medical industry to put more deaths and more COVID. On top of that, you know, really, the danger always of this virus, like any illness or any virus, has been when you've got other underlying conditions, other, you know, comorbidities. That's the point of that. So if you have some of those, this virus is a massive risk to you and your life, and you need to be quarantined and protect yourself at every course. I mean, there's no doubt about that. That is a fact, and I'm sharing that with you now because it's the gospel truth. So never do we say it's not nothing. It's a legitimate virus, and they exist, and this is one of them. But never should it have been politicized the way that it has. I mean, if you go back and you listen to Fauci right at the beginning, he told you the dangers of masks, they're not effective. Those are his words. They don't work. You go look at that. It's on YouTube. It's on media. He says that real terms, he puts that out there. That's Fauci, the guy who's running around now with the rest of them saying, wear your mask, or in the Biden campaign, of course, as some sort of patriotic symbol of, the fact that you're doing your duty to contain it. Yet all the experts said it would never be the answer to curtailing this virus. Now, you know, certainly social distancing and not getting into those big rooms of a lot of people, sure. And especially if you are somebody who should be quarantined, you don't want to be doing that, clearly. So that's where this thing was taken out of context. And everybody needs to understand this. And it doesn't need to be really as complicated as it is out there. But that's what the left always does. They can't, you know, they don't have the brilliance. So they baffle you with bullshit, basically. Isn't that what it is there? That's the old lesson we used to understand as kids, you know, you either have brilliance or you baffle them with BS. That's really what it is. And that's what they do. And this is all a bit of baffling going on here as they continue on with their next form of how do we get Trump out of there? You know, that's all this is about. But now I would suggest to you right now, and some of you may not agree or believe this maybe, but I think we have an incredible opportunity right now on our doorstep in America. I absolutely feel very positive and almost lifted up a bit now that I see the president has opened up the doors of the deep state, the establishment, and said, go have it, you know, that to me was a very good sign that he's staying true to his roots. He's never, it's another reinforcement, the fact that Trump is not for sale. You're not going to buy him off. And golly, we need that so badly in our country, don't we? I mean, don't we need that, my fellow American? I mean, isn't that what Trump is all about? I mean, that is the brand of American politics. That's the brand of Cheerios he offers. He's very different in that way. And I really applaud that. But we need more people. And I'm talking to you out there, a lot of you big thinkers and voices and people who understand the importance of a conservative message and a patriotic message and what that means to our nation. And I'm speaking to you out there, and also many of you who, well, are social media influencers. And I think that shouldn't escape everybody. I mean, there are people, and many of you out there, many on our team as well, who really dedicate their lives and spend, oh, wow, countless hours out in social media to put a wider net out there and to be able to drive a bigger message, because really that's all social media is a tool. It's a tool. It's another way. Well, that's the way President Trump uses it as well. It's another way to get around the mainstream conversation, the networks and the rest of it, who clearly are bent on our destruction. You know, it's another way to get around all of that. And that's why Trump has been so successful speaking directly to the American people and then the broader scope, the world, through that massive Twitter account he has. You got to remember something. There is no other single social media account on planet Earth that would have the power and the potential delivery method that President Trump's Twitter account has. Think about that a moment. There's nothing else like it. There's no other single account that comes close to it. When you consider the people he can reach there and the work that he does, I mean, think about it in those terms, people, and think about the world at whole. I mean, you got to realize he's reaching over 87 million. I mean, is that crazy or what? Just with a tweet. And then he reaches more than that because whatever he puts out there, they pick up and they run with it, you see. And then he forces the hand of the networks and he forces the hand of so many others. So, you know, on that point right there, this was probably the most brilliant method and certainly the brilliant thing that he has done, President Trump, when a lot of people were questioning this up front. And I totally get it because it was so unusual. I mean, it was completely something we have never seen in our nation. But my fellow Americans, we have never seen the hostilities that we see right now either, have we? Hence why we are in the position we're in, and hence why we have President Trump. You know, President Trump also has become this major political figure, an American figure, and he has molded himself in such a way. And I would suggest to you, it's happened right in front of us, right in front of us. You've seen the making of a world leader. A world leader has developed right in front of your eyes. And in ways, in a very interesting point, that where the world was against him. You remember NATO, the United Nations, the World Health, all of these groups, you know, were threatened, and other leaders were threatened by Trump. And then brilliantly and systematically began to turn these world leaders right onto his form of doing business. It really was a stroke of genius when you see what he's done across the world, the landscape here. I'll tell you, we've lived through some interesting moments in our lives, depending on how old you are. I mean, if you were here when Ronald Reagan was president, you remember that being a historical moment with, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, pull down that wall, you know, and I mean, you remember the moments when he totally, not really single-handedly, but in some ways he did, but certainly with the help of Margaret Thatcher and Mikhail Gorbachev. There were others involved in that. It was quite the movement, and how they changed the politics, global politics, in ways that nobody would ever forecasted that an actor from Hollywood would be capable of that sort of change any more than a businessman from the Bronx could be capable of this kind of change. You see where I'm at. And that's what you're living through again if you were here back then. And if you're younger than that and you haven't, like my own children, my own teenagers who are 17 and 18 now, then you're seeing, you know, Trump is the first monumental president of their lifetime. They've never seen anything, you know, never seen anyone quite like that, because they lived through the Obama years or even the W. Bush years. I mean, we're all part of the establishment, just like Clinton and the first Bush. And these were all globalist establishment type presidents that, you know, were on one line, one path forward. Trump is the first one that is this different makeup. So I don't know. You begin to question. I know I do. Like, what happens after this? And you have to think about that. I think about it a lot. Who's in the bullpen? What are we going to do? And maybe some of you that you think that's jumping it a little bit. Let's get through the 2020 election first. And sure, I hear you. And I don't. I mean, I understand that, but I don't question the importance of this election is vital. But the importance of the republic is even more important, and this plays to that importance, but our republic goes on no matter what. And we have to think about it right now in terms of who is it that follows Donald Trump as president, who becomes the 46th. The president gets another 4 years, everything goes well. And you see right now, he's got the gloves off. He's out there from the COVID thing. He's a brave man. And he, you know, but isn't this really characteristic who Trump is? I mean, he's never one to back down. He's never afraid of what the fight is in front of him. I love that about a leader. Love that about any leader who's willing to look at the problem head on, face on, and take it on in such a way. I mean, my fellow Americans, that is an American trait that we don't see enough of. We don't see that enough in American politics today. Unfortunately, the majority of these cats are sellouts. And they do it for their own self-preservation, their greed, their thirst for power. And along comes with all of that are the, you know, the ironclad gates and the jets and the fancy hotels and that beautiful life that comes with the glamour of a political life, which is, you know, again, what many of us are talking about. How do they become like the politicians like Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi and all of these? And they're Democrats and Republicans both. Let me not suggest to you it's just on the left, who become, you know, I mean, millionaires many times over. I mean, many of these cats are well over $100 million successful on a salary that's, you know, $160,000 a year or $180,000 a year. Like, how does that happen? You'd have to be a hell of a poker player or really hit the cards right or win some sort of a lottery to turn those stakes into that. Yeah, that alone should give you food for thought, shouldn't it? Now, you think about that and, you know, and that's the problem where we have our political world. And, you know, one of the conversations I want to really dive into in the future here with Dinesh is, again, we talked to you about term limits, and we discuss this from time to time, but there's a lot more to this to talk about, and it can happen. Now, we would need two-thirds of the members of the Senate and the House to agree, or we get three-fourths of the states. They'd have to ratify, and we'd have to go that way to get this new resolution in place to be able to say, okay, there are term limits here. And what that would look like. And there was a resolution put into place by Senator Rick Scott this past year, by the way. Got to tell you more about this ahead and explain to you more about what this will take. But I'd go one step further. And as President Trump's opening up the gates right now, and I've shared with you before, I think it's time to put term limits on everything, including these key positions that Brennan Clapper and Comey had prior, which has really got to be these heads of these bureaucracies and these government agencies should also have a time period where they serve the people, they serve the nation, and then they move on. It's just, and the reason I say all of that, it sounds extreme to a lot of people, is that this corruptness, it breeds within all of these agencies, and it's a breeding ground for it. And the only way to do that is not to leave somebody in that power position for 20, 30, 50 years even. That's the only way to, you know, offset that, is to not have the culture that can, you know, it's like a mold that builds. The more you leave it there, the more the mold grows, or the hornet's nest. The more you leave, the hornet's nest grows and grows. It's the same thing with these political figures and the people that are the heads of these bureaucracy agencies. They're like a hornet's nest or a bag of mold. You leave it there long enough and it explodes. And it's the same thing we have here. So we got to look at that as well and see how to change that up, you know. Well, listen, you catch me every day here on The Voice of a Nation, 6 p.m. Eastern time. I have an encore at 10 also later in the day, Eastern time. You hear it anywhere in the world on iHeartRadio or on our apps, Apple, Android, and Alexa. Amazing apps. They're truly amazing. So that's where you catch me on The Voice of a Nation. On the weekends, you'll catch me 10 to 12 on the Viewpoint brand. We start with Viewpoint this Sunday at 10 a.m. And then we go into Viewpoint Presents with Michael Johns, my colleague, and at 11. So 10 to 12 on Sunday, and later in the day, 6 to 8 as well. All our shows go to podcasts, by the way. And you catch them right there at Apple's podcast or any podcast network around the world, Spotify, Stitcher, you name it. Thank you, as always, my fellow Americans, for being with me on the journey and helping us get the word out there that America is absolutely worth saving, and it is the place to be, and it's time to get involved and get loud.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for